Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Speech Uncensored podcast. Another great episode for you this week. What a treat to get to sit down with Kara Foch and talk about her experiences with a concussion, going through graduate school to become an SLP, going through therapy while in graduate school for the results of that concussion, and becoming an SLP who provides concussion therapy to other folks. So yeah, we had a lot of fun talking about how her experiences have shaped her practice and what we can learn from someone who's experienced, you know, both sides of that. Like, that's some pretty insightful stuff there. So I really enjoyed sitting down and chatting with Kara, who has like a gold star in my book because homegirl like super prepared. She might be upset with me for sharing this, but I think it's adorable and applaudable. She prepared like 9 pages of notes for our interview. I wish I had that kind of dedication. Anybody else with me? Super impressed. I hope it shows in our conversation. So if we got off track, clearly that's my fault because, you know, I love those spur of the moment questions and whatnot. Okay, so let's get to it. This is the Speech Uncensored podcast. I'm your host, Leanne Porter. And now we're going to go ahead and meet Kara and dive into our topic. Welcome, Kara. I'm so pleased to have you for today's talk on concussion care. And in addition to that, like your own experiences with concussion. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. Actually have very fond memories of listening to your podcast while walking around my neighborhood in those early pandemic days. So it's fun to get to actually talk to you.
What a treat. Yay. I love it. Well, super. I hope it was like entertaining as well as informative.
Absolutely.
Okay, good. Excellent. Okay. I'm just ready to dive in. I want to learn a little bit more about you. Tell me who you are. Where are you? And what do you do?
So I am an outpatient speech pathologist in Omaha, Nebraska, and I am here because I had a bad concussion in 2014. I was in graduate school at the time to be a speech pathologist, and now it's been over 7 years, and I am working in outpatient care with people who have had concussions, so it's a privilege to take that experience and now be on the other side helping others.
Yeah, that's really great. I'm really happy for this topic because my caseload has picked up with concussion care. My hospital has a neurologist who specializes in concussion. And so I've seen an uptick only because I've like just started like covering their outpatient clinic. And okay. So they're like feeding me these patients. So like a large portion of my caseload right now in outpatient is post-concussion care. So whereas I would see like maybe 1 or 2 a month, at least half my caseload right now is concussion care.
Oh, wow.
So I am like, yeah, I am like in it. And as I was looking over your like outline for today's talk and the different things you wanted to cover, I was so pleased to see how you wanted to include not just the nuts and bolts of like the cognitive therapy that we can provide as SLPs, but also like the complementary health tools that go along mm-hmm. with it. And for the discussion guide for the questions that you prepped, you like targeted that, you know, you asked about, yeah, the important role of complementary approaches in concussion recovery and where do SLPs fall, like mm-hmm. where in our scope of practice does that fall? Mm-hmm. So like, I like zeroed in on that. I'm really looking forward to like unpacking that with you.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be great. So I'll stop doing like spoilers. But that was just something that like through this podcast and then through my practice, like talking with people who are experiencing the concussion, the foggy brain mm-hmm. or the difficulty remembering things or the mm-hmm. changes to their attention span. That's just the tip of the iceberg. Like they have so many more symptoms that are influencing their overall recovery and their mm-hmm. overall management of these symptoms. Mm-hmm. Like it's so short-sighted not to address them in some fashion. And we have the tools to do that. So
absolutely.
Until I didn't like wait. I just launched into my
You did great. That's awesome.
Okay. So going back to the beginning. So let's get back to your experience with concussion while you were in mm-hmm. grad school. Mm-hmm. What was it like to be an SLP? Okay, we can all remember grad school. It was not easy. It was challenging in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And now you're handling that in addition to going through concussion. Like, what was that like for you?
Yeah. Yeah, so I think I was 2-3 weeks out from finals, my second semester. So it was pretty early on in grad school, and I had all my clinicals left and lots of classes left. So I think it's probably good that I didn't know how long it was going to take me to recover in the beginning, so I could just keep climbing up that mountain. But it was difficult not knowing what a concussion was and then trying to make plans for the future. So I think maybe my advisor recommended even taking a break from classes that first summer, but I was so set on graduating on time, which I didn't end up graduating on time, but just trying to navigate, how do I look forward and still hope for this career while also taking care of myself now?
I'm really glad you mentioned that even though you still had the aim to graduate on time, that you ended up not graduating on time. And I think it's important. It's one of the counseling pieces I always try to include is like, you know, you have a goal and you're striving for that goal, but you still have to give yourself that space and acceptance if you don't necessarily reach it in the time frame that you established. Because I just assume everybody else is like me. And I am like hypercritical of myself. So I just assume everybody else is too. And that if they don't reach their goal in their time frame, like they'll just be like destroyed and think they're just the worst person in the world. And so it's a big part of that acceptance to be like, you know, have your goals, like work for them, but then it's okay if you need more time, if you have to make adjustments to that plan.
Absolutely. And I think there was a little compromise in the beginning. So I did take some classes and do some clinicals that first summer, so those first 3 months after my concussion. But I think advisors and professors were pretty straightforward that, you know, those hard classes, the more neuro classes or voice disorders classes with a lot of detail, they just didn't think I was going to be successful. And so there was compromise. So I didn't take the really hard classes, but I still took, you know, a couple things. And then I felt like I was moving forward while also giving myself time to heal. So it worked out.
Good. Like looking back now, do you feel like they gave you like good instruction? Do you feel like that was worth following? Do you think if you had proceeded with a full caseload of classes that it would have been too challenging? Or do you wonder like, I might have been able to achieve that? Like, what are your thoughts looking back?
Yeah, I actually wonder the opposite. So since it took me a little bit longer to recover, I wonder if I had taken a full semester off and just focused on rehab, if I would have recovered a little bit faster. Because I was still in hours of rehab every week and the fatigue was really bad. I was sleeping a lot. And so I don't think I could have done more, to be honest, but maybe I could have done less. And would have turned out differently. We'll never know. Again, I think it's important to be working towards those goals and feel like you're moving forward. So for some people, they might have been comfortable taking that semester off. I think maybe that would have been detrimental just to my mental health and keep me from, you know, improving that piece. So
interesting. Like, okay, good. I'm glad that you recognize that maybe it would have been beneficial then to like have that break, have that rest. But at the same time, you needed to have some kind of marker to show that you were progressing and moving forward with your goals. I think that's important for us to recognize as therapists too. I'm always looking for that Goldilocks zone with patients, right? I don't want things to be too challenging. We get overwhelmed, we shut down. If it's too easy, we might feel like we're not progressing. We're not moving forward. Like, where is that happy medium? And in the midst of things, I'm sure it's going to be very challenging to kind of like figure that out and parcel it out.
Yeah.
But now that you've been able to kind of look back, you could have even or wonder if less would have been better. Oh, that's so interesting. I love it.
Who knows? I feel like as a therapist now, though, I'm very protective of my patients. So knowing what it feels like to not feel good and try and go to school or try and go to work, I'm always trying to get people to do less. But then patients a lot of times surprise me. So they know what's best for them, too.
Hear, hear. Okay, so I'm interested to learn a little bit more about if there were any... Did you have any therapy for concussion while you were in grad school?
Yep.
And was it with a speech therapist?
It was with a speech therapist. Yeah.
Was it through your clinic or through something separate away from school?
It was something separate. So I had the option of doing therapy at my clinic with my peers as my therapist, but I was not about to do that. So I went to the rehab hospital in my college town, and they had a concussion team. So I saw physiatry, the rehab doctor. I saw physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech therapy, neuropsychology, kind of the whole gamut. Different pieces got added on at different points over the coming months. But I think I started that whole program, at least that first visit with the doctor, was maybe 6 weeks after my concussion. So pretty early on, I would say, compared to what I see people coming in sometimes years later, I got to start pretty early on.
Nice. So can you describe a little bit about what your therapy course was like? I think what I'm interested in learning a little bit more is the things that you found helpful. Like, what were the tools that the different therapists gave you that really made a difference in your recovery and managing your symptoms in the moment and being successful for the future? And then, of course, hindsight is beautiful, so that you can look back and be like, oh, maybe things that like didn't work out or that you wish were different.
I had a really good experience with my rehab team. I saw physical therapy for the headaches and some neck and shoulder pain. I had another concussion 6 months after the first one, so I ended up going back to physical therapy. I can't remember exactly which one was neck and shoulder and head and all those sorts of things, but that was all physical therapy. Then occupational therapy helped with eyes. I also saw a neurooptometrist and got prism glasses and had to wear funny looking tape in the middle of the glasses for a long time. And so I really feel like once my vision improved, then some of the brain fog went away. So that was huge. Saving the best for last, speech therapy was amazing. I really loved my speech therapist, which is a good sign that I'm in the right profession. So she was a very practical speech therapist, which is what I needed. Being in grad school, I was still taking a couple classes and doing a couple clinicals. So she helped me get out my planner and figure out, you know, at a limited capacity when I'm trying to figure out what my body is capable of and how I'm going to react to things, how can I manage my schedule and get done the things that I needed to. I also had to take incompletes for all of my second semester classes. And so I was studying for finals and my memory wasn't so hot. And so she taught me some study strategies that were amazing. I wish I had had them all through grad school and undergrad. And so that practical functional therapy is exactly what I needed. There, of course, are things that I wish would have been different. Hindsight is 2022. Now that I'm a therapist, looking back, I think that they did an awesome job. But there are some of those lingering symptoms. I feel like I wasn't as prepared for how to manage a concussion once I was a lot better, but not actually better. So those lingering symptoms that maybe didn't bother me every day, but added up to be kind of big symptoms as things progressed.
Okay. All right. So you've given me an overview of like your traditional therapy approaches and the different things that they worked on for you and your circumstances. Let's take a wider view too. So that was just a large portion of your recovery, but it wasn't the end all be all. Let's talk about like completing that picture. What else was instrumental in your recovery?
Yeah, so I think I did that traditional rehab for 6 months, maybe on and off. And then after I had that car accident, 6 months after the original fall, then things just lingered a little bit longer. And so this is a little controversial, but I did see some chiropractors. They were approved by my rehab doctor, so there are good chiropractors out there. And eventually the headaches and the shoulder pain and the neck pain really went away. And then I actually was dealing with some chronic things like GI issues and hormone imbalances before the concussion. And so I think that's why it took me a little bit longer to recover, because my body already was not happy when I had this big jolt to my head. So I did a lot of health and wellness promotion, getting blood work done to see if I had deficiencies, which I did, getting those treated, and then just taking care of things that made me feel better. I'll talk about yoga, and that has been a huge part of my recovery, and some interval training and that exercise piece. So nutrition, exercise, and then slowly getting back to the things that were important to me.
Excellent. I see you have a note here about learning when to push yourself versus rest. Mm-hmm. I would love to hear your insights on this, because that is a battleground, like, for me personally. Mm-hmm. But also, I want to learn when I'm working with patients how better to judge the same thing for them, when to be persistent in that encouragement and when to be like, I think you might could do with a rest.
I think it's hard in the beginning because your body is so unpredictable. So I remember one day early on, I woke up, I felt pretty good. I did a school assignment that took maybe an hour. And then I just crashed and I slept for probably 3 hours after that. That was the first couple weeks. So you can feel fine and then all of a sudden your body crashes and you have to rest. So I do have patients keep symptom logs, and I kept a symptom log that was part of my planner when I worked on in speech therapy. So you can start predicting those things. And then eventually I feel like I did know my body. So some days I chose to go out and spend time with friends and I knew I was going to pay for it the next day, but you have to make those judgment calls on what's important to you.
Mm-hmm. When you kept a symptom log, like, I really want like the nuts and the bolts. Like, did you write down sentences? Did you write down like single words? Like, what did it look like? And what did you pinpoint to put in there? Because I think when people are faced with this, they're like, so I have to write down like every single thing during the day. And they're just like, I don't think I'm going to do that. So like practically, what does a symptom log look like in practice?
Yeah, I was good about making my daily agenda. So my planner, I had my nice, neat little plan for the day. And then I always wrote my headache level. So as it changed throughout the day, I used a 10-point scale. And if it was a 3 when I woke up and then I studied and it was a 7, I would write those numbers down. I wrote what I actually did during the day. So I had my plan in one column and then right next to it, what I actually did. And so pretty quickly I could see, oh, I took a 2-hour nap after I studied for 1 hour. So tomorrow, I'm not going to plan on studying for 2 hours because that's not reasonable. So I think making predictions and then writing down what actually happens is helpful. You don't have to write a lot, just a word or two. You can get that overall big picture.
Good. I don't know if this was something that you had prepared for, but I'm curious, just based on my experiences with some of my other patients, is the coping with this new, I don't want to say new normal, but like new baseline or new experience of their cognition. And so I feel like there's got to be a level of like processing that grief. And I don't know that everyone recognizes it as such. So I'm wondering if you could speak from your experience and then as your work as well, like how you navigate the emotional impact and aspects to concussion care.
I will say that there were a lot of ups and downs. I actually just looked up the definition of the word cope to get ready for another presentation I'm doing. And it said something about successfully navigating all of your situations. And I don't know that I was perfectly successful all the time in navigating that loss. Exactly like you talked about, it is loss. You lose out on opportunities. You lose out on your sense of self, even what you're capable of. And even sometimes those long-term memories, people just think, I can't even remember what I did with friends 5 years ago, or I can't even remember what I did yesterday. So you do lose a sense of time and self, and some days you're hopeful and some days you're not hopeful. So I tell patients, I think I'm a lot better these days about checking in with patients about their emotions. I'm a very strategic achiever. And so I think in my early days of concussion care, I thought if I just had all of the education and all of the tools, I could help my patients get better quickly and they weren't going to go through the same emotions that I did. But I realized down the road that that is not the case. And So now we spend a lot more time just on those counseling pieces, as well as the strategy training and the exercises, but making sure to check in almost every session and asking where they're doing that day. And then with the counseling piece, you know, we usually do refer to a formal counselor, but then also can talk about how they're coping, if they're giving themselves time to grieve. And then a lot of people want to push those emotions down and they just want to focus on moving forward and don't even want to acknowledge that they're there. Make sure to tell people you can't let them get buried, or otherwise they're going to bubble to the surface. And so making sure they're taking the time to cope, and then making sure that they're trying to do those things that make themselves feel like themselves, that bring them a little bit of joy, even if they can't do it all the way, trying to get back into the things that make them feel good as soon as possible.
Good. That's excellent advice. Thank you, Kara. Mm-hmm. Was there anything else that you wanted to expound upon a little bit more?
Yeah, let me look. I actually talked to some other speech therapists about this a couple days ago. And they're in school settings or in other settings and said that they didn't even realize all of the symptoms of a concussion. So I don't know if you want me to go into that more. I can.
For sure. Definitely. We're totally taking for granted that, you know, listeners have been working with concussion patients like you and I have. So like, yes, we should be specific about what people come in and what their symptoms are, what they're dealing with, and what they're going to expect you to be able to help them with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think some of the school SLPs said, I know they get headaches, I know they have light sensitivity, but I don't know much else. And I thought, oh my goodness, there's so many things, you know. You can have 50 different symptoms from a concussion. So yeah, we can talk more about that.
By all means, give me the rundown.
So you can have a whole gamut of different symptoms, and every concussion is different. They range from the obvious ones like headache and eye issues and light sensitivity, all the way to sleep. A lot of concussion patients have sleep issues. They have trouble going to sleep and staying asleep. If you think about how sleep affects just your regular memory and your regular word finding, then you take that in the context of a brain injury, that can really exacerbate things. So you want to make sure that you're asking patients about all of the changes that they're having, not just memory and word finding and concentration like we would assume.
Mm-hmm. Perfect. Have there been any like unique presentations that patients with a concussion have experienced who come in and you're like, huh. Not like, oh, that's new, I've never heard of that. But like, I think what I'm asking is like, because of where they're at in their life, like, I wonder how many patients your SLP that you worked with when you had a concussion has worked with graduate students. Also graduate students who are in the same profession. Like, that's unique, mm-hmm. right? That's a fun, special challenge and presentation. Have you had any, I'm thinking of is outliers, but I'm mm-hmm. not sure that really mm-hmm. fits.
I actually did get to see one of my own speech pathology students. So I think she was an undergrad, but that was a fun experience. Well, I see our child and adolescent kiddos all the way up through adults. So people are in school, they're at work, they're stay-at-home moms, kind of the whole gamut. And so I think everybody is just trying to get back to their version of normal. Most people are really busy with something, whether it's school and work or volunteering or being really busy in their job and trying to get to the next promotion. So I think some of the big outliers are when people come in with comorbidities. So maybe they've had another condition in their past, they have a history of stroke or they have a history of multiple concussions. Multiple concussions can be a little trickier to treat, can just take a little bit longer. Also, you know, when people come in and maybe they've had a harder time coping with things in the past, maybe their personality is maybe more anxious or they're a little down. And so all of those factors can influence how I'm going to treat a patient and what they need.
I like how you mentioned, you know, they want to get back to their normal. I feel like when I hear that as a clinician, I want, like, my instinct is to balance hope with reality. Mm-hmm. Like, I am not there to like dash anybody's mm-hmm. dreams. And I'm not going to be that person. They were like, well, she said I'd never XYZ. Like, I don't want to be that dream crusher. Mm-hmm. Like, that's terrible. I'm like literally the opposite. I'm always like encouraging people and like, you can do anything. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm going to support mm-hmm. you shooting for the moon. Like, we're going to see how far we can get. But I feel like if they are only focused on getting back to something that they lost, they won't be able to see the gains that they're making in the present. Mm-hmm. And they'll always be comparing themselves to something that may never fully realize. And I want people to be successful. So I find a hard time navigating that and explaining that succinctly without sounding kind of crazy, like I feel like I just did. So, like, do you experience that kind of like no man's land when people are mm-hmm. like, oh, I'm so mad. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm so frustrated. I just want to be the person that I was. And in your brain, you might be thinking, well, let's make peace with that because that's never going to happen. You're never going to be who you were yesterday. Mm-hmm. You're never going to be a week from now who you were a week ago. Mm-hmm. Like, we're always changing and evolving. So, like, let's get on board with that train. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious as another, you know, clinician, like, how you felt about that or how you have found yourself navigating those waters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. One time a friend told me after she gave birth to her first little baby that she kept waiting to go back to normal. And then one day she realized after you've had this big life experience, you're never going to feel exactly the same way that you did before. You're going to gain some things and some things are going to change. So I think sometimes relating the concussion experience to other life changes can help normalize that a little bit for people.
Ooh, Kara, I love that. That was beautiful. I'm writing it down. Give me a second.
Well, I stole it from my friend, so can't take too much credit.
That's how we grow and learn, right? We pass on knowledge. We share it.
Mm-hmm. Also giving patients the autonomy to be self-aware. So I remember I had a patient come in and she really did really well with her rehab and was making a lot of progress, but wasn't quite ready to go back to a full-time job. And she called me up and said, oh, I have an interview and I'm going to go work at a school and I'm so excited. And so next session she came in and we sat down and just asked those gentle prodding questions. Okay, so what's that going to be like? What's that going to look like? What are you going to do? Where are you going to be in the school? And slowly through those questions, she realized, man, I can't go to the grocery store for 20 minutes. I'm probably not going to be able to be in a school lunchroom for 30 minutes or on the playground for an hour. And so I think sometimes we do need to be direct, but then also we can help patients discover things for themselves of maybe where they are right now and make those choices.
Excellent. Good advice. So I'm interested in transitioning more to a couple like nuts and bolts of our actual SLP therapy that we'll do with patients. So what are some tools that you have found very useful for working in your practice?
So I know you are a big fan of outcome ratings and measures and things like that. And so I love goal attainment scaling and I love multifactorial memory questionnaire. So start with attainment scaling. I discovered that on a continuing education course years ago. And I think it's when I sent you to link about functional therapy. And I have had such good outcomes. So, I mean, it's just goal setting, right? You have your patient say, I want to get better at reading for school. And then you help them figure out where they are now and set benchmarks that they can track their progress. But I found that if they have that practical thing to focus on in therapy, they really can see the progress. Earlier, you talked about some people are so focused on getting back to normal, they forget how far they've come. So I think some of those goal setting tools can help people realize how far they've come. Memory too can be so ambiguous. And so if someone comes in and says, oh, I'm having trouble with my memory and they have trouble defining that, sometimes just giving them a tool so that they can rate, okay, am I finding my words in conversation? Am I losing my keys every day? Am I forgetting my appointments? Will help them pin down what practically is really impacting their day then we can start there.
Yeah. And the other thing that I love about the MMQ or the multifactorial memory questionnaire that you mentioned is that we can actually get a T-score from it. So like a standardized, like mm-hmm. normative measure, which mm-hmm. is really unique and very helpful. So that will also help us track measurable changes. Mm-hmm. So I feel like there's like a much better like scientific way of describing that, but I'm just too tired at the end of this day to like pull that language out. Like it's all been used up at work, y'all. Like right. It's gone. I didn't save any for tonight.
That's why we link the resources. Go read about it.
That's right. But yeah, I find that really, really helpful, like for documenting. So it's not just a subjective measure. Mm-hmm. It's very objective as mm-hmm. well. And that is really helpful. Mm-hmm. It's also like a reflection tool because I like to like give it to them again mm-hmm. Halfway through or at the end of therapy. And they can see the changes and how they're scoring things differently. Mm-hmm. And it's really good. Okay, continue.
Like I said, my speech therapist was very practical. So that's how I run my sessions too. So I'm all about the strategies. I feel like just giving lists of options and talking through the big struggles that they're having that day or the next day, the therapy kind of runs itself once you get talking. You don't have mm-hmm. to get so creative or do all the memory games and brain training and things like that. Sometimes I will give patients cognitive retraining exercises. Some people really want that, but I've really found that it's the strategy training that makes the big difference.
Yeah, I agree. And I love that you mentioned, like, when you do the strategy training, that the sessions run themselves because the patient provides, like, the area that they're struggling in or the specific example area of their everyday life that needs improving. And you get to problem solve that with them and mm-hmm. generate options mm-hmm. and say, okay, now go forth and implement mm-hmm. and report back and let me know what worked and what didn't. And you just get to kind of like keep fine tuning that. Mm-hmm. And so they get to see that coming to see you is having like an impact on their everyday life. Mm-hmm. They get to see that the tools that you're giving them, they're able to implement mm-hmm. and see change with. And that's really great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Patient just said that the other day. Said, I wasn't quite so sure about this speech therapy when we started, but you're really changing my life. Awesome.
Yay! That's so glad. Good. And it's really good that you recognize that not every patient wants to go that route. Like some people really like that structured task. Mm-hmm. Like they really gravitate towards mm-hmm. that. And they'll tell you. They'll be like, I have legit had people say, like, aren't we going to work on a worksheet? Like they want it. They're not like expecting it like, well, that's what I did in the past sure. or something like that. They're like, that's like a zone they feel comfortable yeah. in.
I've never had someone ask for a worksheet. That's amazing.
Well, kind of more in the context of like homework, like things to send home with them, sure. you know, so mm-hmm. they have something to work on. They were like a go-getter. They,
yeah.
like, they wanted structure to apply at home. And I'm like, I wanted to like do, you know, the strategy training mm-hmm. with them, but they were like, no, I need a folder and I need pages in it. I will see what I can do.
Sounds like they had their own strategies too, their right. folders. And
yeah, I'm like, we'll see what we can do. Okay. What else? Tell me, like, I'm wondering if we could dive into a little bit more of that complementary mm-hmm. approaches.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we've talked about strategy training. We've talked a little bit about the cognitive exercises, but then there are those whole conversations you have to have outside of that traditional therapy about how things are actually going for people. So back to my own experience with other health issues affecting my life and my recovery, like I've learned to always ask people about how they're feeling, those other symptoms, and can even turn some of that education into treatment tasks, right? If people are able to listen and pay attention to education about nutrition and sleep hygiene and things like that, they're able to implement those things. So I feel like patients appreciate the education about sleep hygiene the most because, don't quote me on this, but I think it is maybe the second or third most common change after a concussion, something like that. It's really high up there. So people want to figure out, how am I going to sleep? Can give them some tools. Doesn't mean that sleep hygiene is going to fix their sleeping issues. They're probably going to have to talk to their doctor and figure some other things out, but we can at least give them some help in that area. I also love, like I said, I'm a cheerleader for yoga for brain injuries. I feel like about maybe half of patients are on board with that, and the other half are a little skeptical, but I love the organization Love Your Brain. If you guys haven't heard of it, they're a whole organization dedicated to yoga for brain injuries, and so they have a website with videos. They have classes in a lot of communities where people can sign up for free classes and go. They're in a community of other people who have had a brain injury, and they can take the benefits of movement and breathing without trying to get into some crazy headstand pose like you might think the Instagram version of yoga, right? That's not what it's about. It's about breathing and being able to relax. There's actually a lot of research that they're starting to do that yoga can improve your attention and it can improve your memory. And I found that with me. I do think it helped me with my memory because I was having to learn new poses and I was having to remember a sequence and a free flow. And that was really hard when I started, but as I kept doing it, I kind of felt those pieces clicking into place. And so I'll tell patients about that and even mindfulness videos. So Love Your Brain has some, and there are so many apps out there, right? But we'll even do those at the beginning of a speech therapy session if people are feeling really scatterbrained and distracted, kind of talk about what's going on, talk about those emotions and coping, and then to transition into the therapy, sometimes taking just 5 minutes to do a mindfulness video, people will say, oh, I feel so much more relaxed. I feel so much more focused. So those can be so productive for your sessions and really helpful for your patients.
I've noticed as I've been working more and more with post-concussion patients, when they talk about different kinds of symptoms that I see could be addressed partially by mindfulness habits and breathing exercises, I will offer those as additional strategies to use. It's really funny seeing the different reactions of people because all of it's positive. And I don't know if part of that is just kind of our pragmatics and our social setup. And, you know, most people aren't going to like give me the stink eye and be like, girl, you crazy, like right to my face. They might be thinking that and they'll like throw the papers away when they get home. But, you know, in session, they'll nod and be polite. Right. Mm-hmm. So it's been like positively received. And I always give people the option to be like, if this doesn't sound like something you're interested in, you can tell me. I won't ask about it again. We won't dive in any deeper. We'll look at other options. Mm-hmm. So like, I always kind of give them that space to be like, this is not for me, Leanne. Stop trying.
Yep.
But like today I was working with people and I like offered some of these and they were like so happy with the tools. Mm-hmm. They could see that they had added tension and that stress was a big issue as well for them, like that was exacerbating their concussion symptoms. And so like one of the things I wanted them to do was to just draw a chart, and down one column was like their stress triggers and down the other column was their concussion triggers. And that was really helpful for them because then they could dive in a little bit more about what are concussion triggers? Mm. What are stressors? And see how some are different and some overlap. Mm. And so when they talk about and they give me these examples in their everyday life of the areas that they're struggling in, we can start pinpointing like which column those go into. And they can use different or the same strategies to manage both of them.
That's great.
So sometimes I'm like, you question. You're like, is this speech pathology? Like... I wonder, I'm like, is this too much something else? I don't know. But it's like, it's managing their symptoms and their like attention and memory that is the problem that they're coming to me to see, like improves because of those things that they're managing now. So
that, and we have the tools and resources, like you said, to educate people about those supplemental things that are going to impact their cognition. So I feel like in the beginning, I really tiptoed around those things because I didn't know, is that in my scope of practice? Is that not? I'm not a licensed dietitian. Can I even talk about nutrition? And so I think letting our patients know, these are just some things that I found helpful personally or other patients have found helpful, in guiding them to the professionals as needed. But should we really be holding back information that could help them with their cognition? I think not.
I agree, Kara. I agree.
Good.
Perfect. All right. So I think we've covered everything. So if people are like, yeah, Kara, you've got tons of great information. Like, what other information were you not able to get to today? How can I find out about that? Like, how can people reach out and connect with you?
So I have a budding Instagram account. I'm dipping my toes into those waters at Rethink Speech Therapy. And RethinkSpeechTherapy.com is my website where I have some blog articles and some downloadable resources too.
Excellent. Wonderful. Oh, and you like briefly mentioned that you sent over some resources for me that I'll put up in the show notes that will accompany the discussion guide so that you can gather with a group of SLPs and unpack this information and talk it over with other clinicians and do what we did here today. Talk about your practice and learn from each other. So it's really great. So we'll have those resources up. They look amazing. They are created from the VA, right? The Veterans Administration.
Some of them are. Yep.
And so that's great. I find a lot of our really helpful concussion tools come from the VA. So it's good stuff.
I found those resources to be so helpful. Again, stemming from one of those ASHA continuing ed courses that I posted. I think it's called the SCORE Manual. Mm-hmm. They have great strategy training in there. They have the goal attainment scaling documents, and they have a couple activities too that you can do.
Excellent. Yeah. And you also listed three different CEUs that people can take to dive in more into these topics. And they look really good. I'm familiar with one of them that was phenomenal. Okay. So I'm sure the other two are probably like top notch. And I love that they're all from like different providers. So that's really good too. Yay. Thank you, Kara. This was a treat. I appreciate you taking the time and gathering your tools and your resources together to come and join me and have this chat. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. It was lovely.
Okay, I want to thank you for listening. Be sure to check out the show notes on speechuncensored.com. Please be sure to check out the discussion guide and join in a table talk with other SLPs to talk shop, unpack what you heard in this episode, and talk about ways that you can apply what you've learned, your experiences with applying some of the things we've already talked about. If these are like concepts that you've already been putting into practice, talk about like what's worked for patients, what hasn't worked for patients. And that's, in my opinion, where the growth happens. That's how it's worked for me. So I want to share that with you and create opportunities for you with this podcast. I'd be delighted if you left a thoughtful review on Apple iTunes so other SLPs can find this podcast and join us in our adventures of learning and nourishing and flourishing and being awesome.